Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Old Men and the Three ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
You know, these long West Coast trips to call games have given me the gift of time. Time to put on some headphones and listen to my favorite audio titles on Audible. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. From bestsellers and new releases to celebrity memoirs, mysteries, and thrillers, motivation, wellness, business, and more. Now, I personally love a good murder mystery, and I'm currently listening to An Honest Man by Michael Corrida. It's about murders on a yacht. What more do I need to say? As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/JJ or text JJ to 500-500. That's audible.com/JJ or text JJ to 500-500. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good, but that's when you say to yourself, it's time to get back in the game and take as much of my friend's money as I possibly can. That's right. The hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to be the biggest tycoon ever. It's classic Monopoly, but anytime with tons of twists. Play on countless Monopoly boards, charge your friends rent, or smash their landmarks with a wrecking ball. You can even team up with friends for extra rewards. So put on your game face and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play. Welcome to The Old Men of the Three with JJ Redick and Tommy Alter, presented by Cash App and brought to you by 342 Productions. This is episode 88, Pascal Siakam. Tommy, what a fascinating guy, what a fascinating player, what a fascinating backstory. We get into all of it with Pascal. He's an awesome, awesome guest. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, he's definitely up there for craziest rises and backstories getting to the NBA, much less to a second team All-NBA player, which is we get to in the interview, but it's amazing that he's reached that peak from where he started.
The best breakdown I can give of that is the guy was second team All-NBA about 7 or 8 years after he got introduced to the game. That's pretty wild to me. And we get into all of that with Pascal. Quick announcement. We are going to push our live show in South Florida on December 7th due to a scheduling conflict. The two guests that we had lined up are now unable to make the show. And this was a very tough decision for us to make. But one of the things that Tommy and I try to do as best we can is we try to honor our audience. And you guys have been amazing in the last 14 or 15 months with this show. The Brooklyn crowd that we had in September for our first live show was amazing. We brought amazing guests. And we want to honor you guys for taking time, booking a ticket, spending your money, and we want to give you the best show possible. So we are going to do a show in South Florida. We're going to do it later in early in 2022, and we promise we will have some awesome guests for you guys. But we felt like you just didn't want to hear us talk with just Duncan and Davis.
No, our first Miami show, we need to bring the heat.
Yes,
no pun intended.
There you go. One other thing, if you do want a refund for your tickets, you can get a refund point of sale from thebrowardcenter.org where you booked your tickets. No problem. Tommy, there's 30 teams in the NBA, and there's a lot of awesome stuff happening around the league. And I think we should make it a goal of this podcast to highlight everything happening in the NBA as much as we can. And one of those things, hey, we're going to have a Toronto Raptors player on the pod this week. And I think we should get to our conversation with one of one, Pascal Siakam. Pascal, what's up, man?
What's
good
up,
to have
man?
You.
Thanks for having me. I feel like I'm big time now. You know? I made it.
We've had a couple of your former teammates on. We had Fred on last fall, and we had DeMar on as well last fall. DeMar. So
that's a good roster right there.
What we've learned, Tommy and I were talking about this, what we've learned is that the Toronto Raptors fan base is strong. And generally speaking, from our experience with those two guys,
you know, there's a lot of buzz about these appearances, right. So you need to step it up.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think I can. Like, that's like, you got Fred. I know, first of all, Fred gives like great interviews and stuff. And like, so I know his podcast is probably on point. And then you got DeMar. So like, that's tough. It's tough. I'm going to try my best, but.
Right. They have been asking for you for a while. I think since the show started.
Oh,
yeah. Because they leave comments. People leave comments whenever. Mm-hmm. And what's been happening is like, we'll post a player from like another team that has nothing to do with you or the Raptors and everything. Yeah. And there'll always be like three or four people being like, when's Pascal coming?
For real? That's interesting. Like, I wouldn't expect that. I wouldn't expect that, but yeah, I'm honored.
I want to get something out of the way right at the beginning of the conversation.
Let's get it.
And that is Kawhi's shot because
I love it.
We flew in this morning and because of COVID, I hadn't really been here. I came once my first year with the New Orleans. We were here the night you guys got your rings, which was an awesome experience for me. It was one of the best nights of my life. Thank you, NBA, for that. But I realized it's only the second time I've been back to Toronto. As we got breakfast this morning, we were driving by Scotiabank Arena. And I just kind of wanted to relive that a little bit, a little bit of a masochist here, but relive it a little bit with you. I rewatched the tape a few times. This morning, you're at the top of the key. Mm-hmm. Tell me what's going through your mind as Kawhi gets to his spot and takes that shot.
Yeah. I think at that point for me, I'm just like, well, I don't know. I don't think I was playing that well that game. Like it was a weird game, right? Like it was obviously game seven. Like it's crazy. But yeah, he gets the ball on top of the key. So I obviously we got to get the ball to Kawhi. Like that's the play. Like there's no other play. We got to get him the ball. And my man, I think, who was guarding me? I think it was like either Joel or Ben was guarding me. And Kawhi had the ball and they both went to him. And I was like, I was wide open at the top of the key. And I was like waiting. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what's going on. I know Kawhi's going to shoot it, but it's looking like they both got him. Like it's Ben and it's Joe. So, and obviously they have high hands and everything. So I'm thinking like, I don't know how he's going to get this off. I know he's gonna get it off. I don't know what to do. Like I was just literally watching. I felt like I was like a supporter too. Like I was on the side and just watching because I'm just there like waiting and I'm like, okay, like what is he gonna do? Like is he gonna shoot it? Is he gonna pass it? Like what's going on? And yeah, it was crazy, bro. Like I for me, I'm just like I just wanted him to get it off. That's my only thing. Like how is he gonna get it off? Because it's like it looked impossible to be honest, but he got it off and. Yeah, like all the bounces, just watching it, all of us.
When it first hit the rim, did you think there was any chance that ball was going to go in?
No way. Like, it looked like it was coming off. Like
right back.
Like, it looked like it was coming off, but then it hit it, and it's like, I'm just like, if you look at me in the video, I don't even know if you can see me, but like, I'm just like waiting, and I'm like, oh, like, kind of like all the bounces, and yeah, the rest was, yeah, and like, you know, it was history.
we're going to touch base a little bit on the finals run and the championship. It's just an incredible moment in Toronto sports history, up there with Joe Carter's walk-off home run for sure. I have one small thing to say because I didn't watch the clip. It was so painful. I didn't watch the clip for well over a year.
For real?
Yes. And I was scrolling through Instagram one day, and there was a fan angle from right behind your bench, the SportsCenter or House Highlights, one of those accounts posted on IG. And it was the first time I'd rewatched the clip. And what I realized from rewatching the clip was when Kawhi caught the ball, he got a running start and traveled.
Oh my God. Come on, man. We're not going to do this, man.
I'd say we've talked about this at least three times in the show already.
No. We're not going to do this. There was no travel. No, there's no way. Like, and... Yeah, there's no travel.
What are some of your other memories from that series?
Well,
You had a big game.
Yeah, I think it was like game two. I think it was like game two or something. It was here. I think it was at home.
Yeah. I think it was game one.
It was game one.
Because you jumped
Yeah. It was game one. Yep. I think game one. So yeah, that was like it was really good. But it was a tough series. Like I mean, like they. I think the way we matched up was like, you know, obviously we got Joe, we got Ben, like all tough, you know, on defense and you got they have shooters everywhere and it was a tough series and I think for me what I remember is like I don't know it was game three, like Joe was going crazy and he was doing all the
he did a windmill.
Yeah, like he was like in the zone and I think it was just always like back and forth. I remember game was it in Philly? Was it game five in Philly? Or game six in Philly when Kawhi was kind of like going crazy too. Like it was in Philly. Like he was.
I think we brought this up with Fred. That was game four.
That was game four?
We were up in the fourth and Kawhi just took
over. Yeah, he just took off. Like, yeah, yeah. That game was crazy.
I'm going to confirm this at some point when we have Kyle on the pod. Mm. But Kyle told me after the series, he's like, I remember in that fourth quarter, I thought the series was over.
Yeah.
Like, I thought Kawhi saved.
It's Kawhi just like, he took over. Like, he literally took over because it was a tough environment. And, like, I think nothing was going in for us. Like, nothing was going well. Like, we wasn't playing really well. And it just, like, yeah, Kawhi just, like, he just took over. And I think after that, it was like, oh, okay, like, we're good. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because it was always, like, kind of, like, back and forth. Like, we win, and then you guys go and, like, blow us out. And then we come back and get a win. And it was just, yeah, it was tough. But yeah, like that game seven, like I always, you know, it's crazy thinking about it. Like just
the what ifs of life. The what ifs of life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you guys think that you will win though if we
There's like, no guarantee. And we still had to win the conference finals. Sure. And of course you can't predict that Kevin's gonna get hurt and that Clay's gonna get hurt.
Yeah, so. Like it was it's all yeah, what
there's,
if, right?
There's what ifs.
But yeah, I mean, I'm sure you kind of recovered a little bit from it, a little bit maybe.
It's just funny because every time we have somebody from that team on, it comes up and we have the same sulk.
I know, that's tough though. That's tough, bro.
You spent that year with Kawhi, and I remember one of my friends that works in the front office in the NBA. He texted me early on in the season. It was probably like 15, 20 games. You guys were rolling, obviously, that year. And he said, am I crazy to say that the Kawhi comp is Michael Jordan in the sense of their game? Not, right. Look, Michael is the GOAT obviously. For sure. But that was really the first year we saw Kawhi out of the San Antonio system.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of just getting to his spots, shooting over people, obviously the defensive prowess, being up close and seeing that and seeing you know, a top 3, top 5 player in the NBA.
Right.
How impressive was he that year?
Yeah, it was super impressive. And I think, obviously, like, it was all this, like, you know, load management and everything going on, right? Like, and I think it was always a thing. And for us, and I watched the Clippers, like, you know, the first year he got there, and it was like, yeah, like, there was always the issue. Like, oh, is he practicing? Or he's not playing today. He's playing today. I think for us, like, we embraced that, you know? Like, we was like, yo, like, when Kawhi is not playing, we're like, we excited. Like, everyone is like, I'm like, yo, today I'm getting 20 shots. Like, I'm you know what I mean? Like, we took it as, like, a challenge. And every time he didn't play, because we knew that when he was playing, like, he was playing at the highest level. Like, he gave us, like, everything. And like you said, like, get to where, like, it's just incredible to watch. Like, and I think for me, like, I've kind of always watched Kawhi a little bit because, like, coming to college, like, he went to San Diego State, I think, and I've always watched, like, kind of like mid majors, like, type of schools, because I went to New Mexico State, so I always watched him, and it's like, yo, the way he developed, and, like, he was always, like you said, in the system, but when he came with us, it was just, like, incredible to see him, like, just get to wherever you wanted to. He was strong, like, he can shoot, he could just impose his will and get where he wants and just elevate and shoot, and, like, it was just incredible. Like, he did it every single night. Well, the nights he played, who was okay with, like, we had fun with it, because I think if you watch our back-to-backs, like, our record of back-to-backs, like, it was incredible, because we was always excited during back-to-backs to play. But yeah, like, he was on another level, like, that year especially, like, and for me just to watch it, like, up close, like, it was crazy.
Did you feel like you learned anything from him from, like, a focus standpoint mentally?
Yeah, I think one thing I learned, obviously, is, like, he just always had the same, and I'm trying to learn from it, because I think for me, like, I'm a pretty emotional player, and like, when things are not going my way, like, it was always like, oh my God, like, because I know the amount of work that I put in, I want it to go my way every time. And one thing with him is, like, things weren't going his way, like, you couldn't tell, like, it was the same, like, it didn't matter if he made 5 shots in a row, or he missed 5 shots in a row. Like, he was the same.
There's a lot of memes of that.
Yeah, like, no, it's literally, that's him though. Every day, like, and I think that was incredible for me. Like, it was just I always watched that, and I always thought, like, it was super impressive and something that I felt like if I could have that type of, like, focus and, like, just knowing, like, even kill mentality that, like, no matter what, I just got to stay the same. Like, it's incredible.
You mentioned Kawhi's development, and I think we should spend a decent amount of time here on your story. because it's such an incredible story. There was a great article from about three or four years ago from ESPN about your introduction to the game of basketball. I would like to hear, you can tell the story better than I can, but you know, when did you start playing? How were you introduced to the game? What was that first court like?
Right. I think, well, for me, I started, I was, because I played soccer, obviously. I mean, every African plays soccer growing up. And my brothers played basketball, right? Like, and for me, it was just, I was always that child. I'm the youngest and I always wanted to do something different. Like, I never wanted to do the same thing that my brothers did. So all my brothers play basketball, and I was like, yeah, I never play basketball. Like, I said it from the beginning, like, I don't want to play basketball. Give me away from it. I want to be different. And I went to, so I just, because I went to boarding school. Like, I was always away most of the time. And I came back during the holidays, and I was at home, and one of my friends came in, and he was like, yeah, like, there's this basketball camp, like, there's this basketball player. I mean, he's from Cameroon, Lungba Mute. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Like, whatever. And my friends was like, oh yeah, let's go. And I just followed them. And I was like, let's get it. And we go, I get there, we play. And I don't even remember what, I don't even know if I was good or not. Like, to be honest, I have no idea. And he had to select like people to, so it was like a pre-selection, and then the selection, and you go into the actual camp in a different city, which was in Yaoundé, because I'm from Douala in Cameroon. So I do that, and I don't know how, but I get selected to go to the actual camp. And I'm just
this is the basketball without borders.
Yeah, no, that's not basketball without borders. Yeah, that's Lungba Mute. Like, that's in Cameroon. And, like, we're still in Cameroon.
How old are you, and also how tall are you?
Yeah, well, I probably was like 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", maybe. Like, I don't remember like exactly. Yeah. And I was like 15 years old. And yeah, I do that, and I go to the camp, and it was okay. And I think Joel was at that camp too. If I remember properly, like, I think he was at the same camp in Yaoundé. And so I do that, and then after that, that's when Basketball Without Borders comes. Like, a couple years after, I think it was like a year or a couple years after Basketball Without Borders come. And I think from me doing that camp, like, people know me a little bit, and they just know about me. I don't really play because I'm in boarding school. I don't really play in the leagues and stuff, or like all year. I just come during the holidays, and I probably go play a game or something, and whenever I feel like it. But then after that, I get selected to go to Basketball Without Borders in South Africa. And I go there, and it was like, I mean, it was like a eye-opening experience. Like, just, it was like so many NBA players, right? It was like, I don't even remember. I think CJ Watson. I think it was like Collison. Who else? It was like a lot of coaches. I mean, the late BJ Johnson, like, scout from the Rockets, and Masai Ujiri was there. Like, yeah. So, this is foreign to me. Like, I don't know nothing really about the NBA. I don't think I've watched an NBA game then, because we couldn't even watch games anyway. So, I never watched an NBA game, nothing. So I go there. And one of the reasons why I always say it's funny, because my sister lived in South Africa at that time. So, in my head, I'm like, yo, I haven't seen my sister in so long. And they give me a free ticket to go to South Africa. I'm like, yo, like, this is the perfect opportunity, you know? Like, I'm going to see my sister. I haven't seen her in a while. So, like, that was really my motivation. Because I'm like, I'm thinking, like, okay, I'm probably not good enough to make whatever is happening there. So I go there. And then it was like, yeah, like, I see a lot of like, NBA players. And I think from there, I just had, like, yo, like, damn, like, this is pretty cool. Like, and these people are supposed to be these stars in the NBA. And they're just here, like, hanging out with us and kicking. And it just felt normal. And it was, like, something that I felt, like, really inspired by. And I was like, yo, like, why not? You know, like, why not try and do that? And then from there, my dad, we had a scholarship. He talked to some school. He did it himself. Like, he talked to some school. They was able to get me a scholarship to go to a prep school in Texas. And I was just like, hey, let's get it. Let's try it.
I have so many questions. So many follow-up questions. First of all, from the time of the local camp.
Yeah.
From Luke's local camp. By the way, I played with Luke twice, actually. Once in Milwaukee and then in L.A. with the Clippers. He's all-time great human being.
That's my dog.
But from the time of going to Luke's camp to when you went to Basketball Without Borders, how much basketball were you playing? So you would not touch a ball, and then you'd go home for the holidays from boarding school.
And well, because I was in boarding school, and we have trimesters, and it's like little 2 weeks vacation we have in between, because I'm away for like 3 months, and then I come back for like 2 weeks, and then there's like a little team out there, and I'm like, all right, my friends is like, oh, okay, let's go, and then we just go and play. Like, it was never, like, we never really, like, because I was never there. Like, I was, and back in boarding school, it's like in a village, it's called Bafia. It's where, actually, where Lungba Mutu is from. So we just go there, and I play soccer all day, like, because nobody really plays basketball. Like, we play basketball on, like, I don't even know if it's, like, land, you know what I mean? It's nothing. Like, there's no hoop, really, like. And so I'm playing soccer all year, and then I go for like a couple of weeks. I'll play like maybe one game in like a little league out there. So there was no real basketball.
You weren't there. Was there a court? Were you working?
Yeah,
on
there
your
was.
Game?
There was a court. I wasn't working on my game. Like, just, like what?
This is incredible.
Yeah, no, I didn't okay. work on my game. I don't think I actually learned how to like actually work on my game until I came to the U.S.
Wow. So once basketball border without borders happened, you get identified, and your father works out this scholarship to, I believe it's called God's Academy.
Yep, God's
in,
Academy
in Texas.
Yeah.
That's the most Texas name. <for high school. laughs>
Yeah. Oh man.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course, it's called God's Academy. Anyways, so at that point now you're like you're full tilt, you're full throttle, you're really into basketball, and you've never really watched basketball either.
No.
So do you remember your sort of your first viewing experiences, or like was there a player that you sort of were like, oh, I could do what he does? Was there a player that you sort of modeled your game after?
I think early on, like again, like I didn't watch that much basketball, right? Like so in my head, I'm just like, okay, like coming in, I always seen like African kids, it's like you get to a certain level and you're big because like, you're pretty tall and it's like you're on a post, right? Like you run, you dunk. And early on, I think one thing I just always thought like, damn, like I wish I can do like more. Like I just, because again, coming back to me being a little kid, I wanted to be different. Like I never wanted to do the same thing. So I'm always thinking like, yo, like I don't want to be just on a block and just, you know, like be a post player. Like I want to do different things. So I always like kind of watch like players that like handle the ball, like, you know, like Kevin Durant or Tracy McGrady, like anything that I could find really. I think at that point it was just like, I'm just trying to find anybody that's kind of tall and that can handle the ball. And like, that's what I want. And it was a dream, obviously, because I was nowhere near those players. But in my head, it was always like, yo, like I want to be different. Like I don't want to just be on the post. Like, and those are the people that I kind of watch early on.
Would you describe your game as somewhat unconventional?
I think it's different. Yeah. I think it's hard.
I was thinking about this. Like, it's hard to classify you as a player because you do so many different things, and you do so many different things well. But there's also just like there's a fluidness, but also a herky jerkiness to how you move.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of guys your size that are shooting floaters.
Mm-hmm.
There's just this whole package of stuff that you've sort of picked up along the way.
Right. And I think like, again, like I said, I just, some of those things, I feel like just, it was just there, right? Like, and obviously I work a lot. I work really hard on some things, but I just feel like even coming up, like I said, my mentality was always to want to be different and do different things. And I just didn't want to like, and I played in the post because I had to, right? Like in college, like that's all I did. Like I didn't shoot a three in college. I think I shot like 10 threes my whole college career. Like
we were talking about this in the plane over how few threes you had taken before you made it to the NBA.
Yeah, like I didn't shoot any threes at all. Like it was like maybe like three. I was on the post or like in college, but I always wanted to, like I wanted to be different. And I remember going to Rico Hines because that's the guy I worked out with, and it, from the first day we always said like we're not gonna just work on post moves, like we're gonna work on ball handling, we're gonna, you know, work on like floaters and your touch and I always felt like I was mobile enough, you know, to do different things and I just think it's natural, it just happened, you know.
I think the soccer parallel with footwork is certainly there. If you look at a lot of guys, European players, Steve Nash, Joel, guys that grew up playing soccer and were around the game a bunch. There's some footwork there. I don't know that your touch is like a natural thing that people have. It's, it's like a, there's a gift there. Not everybody can have that touch. How did you end up at New Mexico State? Were you recruit? I couldn't find anything on your recruitment, dude.
Yeah, like, it was a secret, man. But yeah, like, because I had no offers. Like, you know, I came from like, you know, like just literally when we said nothing, because there was like no word out there of me being, you know, like recruited. And then like, because I came when I was 18. Like I moved to the US when I was 18. And I went to a prep school. So I never went to high school in here. So I went to high school back home. And I graduated from high school. And one funny thing is that I almost went to college back home for like 2 weeks or like 3 weeks or something. So I graduated. I was good. And I started even college like for like a little bit. And then I moved over when I was 18. And I came in. I went to a prep school because then like I had to get like, you know, my grades and some of the courses that I took back home didn't qualify or whatever the case might be. So I had to like figure that out. So I went to prep school and I mean, I don't even think we actually went to school. I don't think I should say that on the record, but but yeah, like it was.
Sounds like you went to the Mount Zion of Texas.
God's Academy.
There were 12 students in the school, all of which played basketball.
Yeah, I'm not going to touch on that, but but yeah, so I just did that, and then from there I met. That's when like I met like, you know, Coach Menzies, and it was like, oh, because the funny thing is like the coach from God's Academy, his son went to New Mexico State, so
there's the connection.
That's the connection, right? Like, so I meet the coach, and then it's like, oh, like this is basically the only offer you got, like, you know, like it's like, yo, like you want to come in, you're gonna redshirt 1 year. And after that, we're gonna make you like eligible, and you're gonna be able to qualify and get there. So I had no other plans. Like, there was no other offers. Like, it was nothing. So I was just like, yeah, let's do it.
If you've been following the pod, you know I'm stepping my suit game up as I'm calling more and more games. So shout out Indochino for getting me all prepared for this home stretch of games. It's also wedding season, so you can get in on looking great. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into the wedding season looking like $1 million, even though the suits start at just $499. You can either book an appointment at one of their showrooms or do what I did and set up your measurement profile on Indochino's website and choose customizations without even leaving the house. I just ordered a nice plum suit with pinstripes. I'm trying to tap into my inner Walt Frazier, and I think it's working. The entire process was super simple, and the suit fits great. That's the sweet spot. So look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code OLDMAN to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code OLDMAN. If you're like me and appreciate great quality, easy-to-wear clothes in your closet, let me introduce you to Rails. They're a Los Angeles-based brand that blends their California roots with an elevated European aesthetic, and the fabrics feel as good as they look. From super luxe button-downs and essential outerwear to vacation-ready shorts and tees, Rails is consciously crafted for the modern man on the move. With the sun coming out, I recently got myself a few short sleeve button downs, and they are super light and comfortable. Try Rails for yourself at their flagship stores in New York, San Francisco, Boston, London, Paris, and beyond, or at rails.com. And take 15% off your order with the code JJ. That's 15% off with code JJ at rails.com.
Did you face any kind of real competition when you were in high school?
Well, we played Prime Prep. There was like I don't know who. I think Emmanuel Moody was on that team. Terrence Ferguson, he was probably like 14 or 15 or something, like just shooting threes, going crazy. That team was always stacked. And I think those were the only actual players that I remember. Maybe I played some other people, but I don't really know. And we weren't really that good, so
yeah. but you felt like you were, like, even when you just got there, you felt like you were holding your own, even when you were.
Well, not really. I mean, I think my first games was pretty terrible. Like, I don't even know, like, first of all, they beat us probably like 50 or something. Like, and I think one of the first games we played against Prime Prep, we went there and was like, I think that was like my first like real like America experience, you know, like we went to some school like in high school and it felt like there was like a lot of people, like there was like cheering and there was music. And for me, it was just all like, okay, like what's going on, you know? Cause I'm coming from Cameroon and I'm like, I don't know none of this. Like, this is all foreign to me. And there was really like, there was really good at basketball. And I'm like, oh my God, like this is nothing compared to what I've seen before. And that was just like what preps, like some prep school. And I think Emmanuel Moody at that time, like he was incredible. Like some of the things that they were doing, it was like, yo, like how do you even do this? You know? And it was like probably my first games, like one of my first games in the US and my first basketball games.
I want to get the timeline right here on New Mexico State. You redshirted.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got freshman of the year in the WAC.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got player of the year in the WAC.
Yep.
So you did all that after playing 4 years of organized basketball.
Yeah.
Were you, I want to sort of get into your mindset back then. Mm-hmm. Like, were you surprised at how successful you were at this game for someone who had just picked it up?
Right.
Did you pick it up and be like, oh, I'm awesome?
Yeah. Well,
do you have irrational confidence, I guess?
Yeah. I was definitely confident. And I think that little time from like, me going to a prep school and then coming to New Mexico State and that redshirt year, I think was like really important for me because New Mexico, right? Like obviously there's not much to do, right? So I think I went to like in college, I went to like 3 parties like my whole college career because it was terrible. That's why. Because we had to drive everywhere to go to parties. And every time we get to a party, it gets shut down. And I'm like, yo, I'm done with the partying life in New Mexico. And we had to drive to El Paso to go somewhere. And I'm like, I'm not driving 45 minutes from Las Cruces to El Paso to go to a party. I was like, yo, like I'm done. I probably went to like 3 parties. And then, so my whole retro year, I'm in the gym. Like, every day, like I had my, you know, it was funny. Like I just had like a little thing there. You see my locker. There's like my toothbrush. There's like, so I'm in there every day. Like I'm sometimes if I'm too tired, cause I live kind of far away from campus. So I had to walk to go back home. So I'm like, yo, it's late. I'm not trying to walk. So I'm just sleeping on the couch, wake up the next day, go to class whenever I feel like it. But again, not on the record. but yeah, like just go to class, come back and do it over again. Like it was just constant. And it was a coach there, like Preston. He was like my guy. We was always in the gym every day. And it was just that, like for like a whole year, I'm in the gym every single day. And I think from that, I kind of like started gaining a little bit more confidence in my game because I put the work in and my first year, my freshman year, I didn't start. I didn't play really until like one of the players got hurt. And it was like, oh man, like this is, you know, like it was just all happened and I played and I did well. And it was just like, you know, let's just keep building on that.
When did the NBA sort of enter the picture for you? Even going back to when you first started in Africa, was mm-hmm. that the dream? Was that the goal? Or were you just... You just smitten with the game. Yeah. You said, I want to pursue this.
Yeah, no, I think early on, like, obviously going to Basketball Without Borders was eye-opening. It was like, okay, like, the NBA is something real. Like, I can feel it. You know, like, I've seen players. I've touched an NBA player. So, in my head, I'm like, okay, like, this, it's there.
They seem like humans to
me. Yeah, they seem like normal people.
You're a human, so you're like, oh, man,
yeah,
check.
Like, this is cool. Like, you know, like, they're actually really cool people. And from there, it was like, all right, let's see what, like, I want to do it. And my dad was always, like, kind of like, because he always, like, saw things that we couldn't really see. Like, you know, like, and I always thought, like, he thought of things like back home for us was like not taboo, but like not a lot of people thought of those things. You know, he sent all his kids to the US to get education. All my brothers play basketball. So it was like, okay, the NBA was something that they wanted to do. But then again, I didn't want to be like my brothers. So I wanted to do something different. But then once I got to that level, it was like, yo, like this is like my dad really pushed me to like believe that like it's possible, you know, like, and again, like you said, I never really played basketball that much. So I'm like, okay, like, how am I going to get to the NBA? You know, like, but once, you know, talking to him and like he really instilling that belief in me and I started believing in myself. And I think that combined with the hard work just made me like, yo, like this is possible.
Your dad passed your redshirt year?
Yeah, he passed
your redshirt year.
My redshirt year in college.
And so you weren't playing on the team.
Mm.
and you weren't allowed to go back.
Yeah.
That I can't even imagine how fucking hard that was.
Yeah, man. Like I always say, like, it was the hardest time of my, like, on my life. Like, I don't think I've never went through anything harder than that. Like, just because, like, and that's why, like, even, like, when things don't happen my way, I always kind of, like, think back at that. And I'm like, man, like, this, it was devastating just knowing that, like, I can't be with my family. I can't be with anyone. Like, you know, like, I had, obviously, credit to my teammates, you know, like I had awesome people that was there for me and my coaches and they were there, but just missing that like family, you know, love and wanting to just go back and seeing your dad. Cause one thing, like the day before he passed, like I missed his call. So in my head, I'm like, you know, like it was so much. So it was hard and I can't go anywhere and I can't talk to, you know, I can't have nobody that kind of relates to me, you know, like I don't have family that's there for me. It was just one of the toughest time in my life, just going through that and just not having, you know, like, yeah, I felt alone. Like, yeah, I never felt like that before. Like,
well, I assume he was the first person you thought of when you heard your name called on NBA draft night, right?
Yep, for sure. Like,
and I read something. He's the best man you've ever known.
Yeah.
And like, you still play for him.
Yeah. No, that's, yeah, he's, Just because, again, like I said, like he always thought of things that we didn't think of, and people thought he was crazy, like and he always believed in these things, and all my brothers play basketball, and it was like, yo, like I wish they can make it, and I was finally that person that made it, and it was just like you know, I just sat there, it was like, you happy, but it's like I want him to be here, like this is the reason why this is happening. It gave us all opportunities to be in a position to be successful, and he's not here to like kind of like, you know, enjoy it. And I remember just all my brothers being together and we just sat and cried like for like, you know, the whole night, like 10-15 minutes, just being grateful, but then also like just feeling sad that he's not there to enjoy the moment.
Speaking of the draft, I read in the ESPN article, there's a good anecdotal story in there about your workout with the Raptors.
Oh man.
Yeah. I'll let you explain it, but it sounds like they weren't viewing you at the time as a first round pick.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it was like it was a strategy. I don't know what it was, man. Like but yeah, that cuz I remember, so I come in and I talked to my agent before, I talked to Todd, I talked to Jafar, and like they're just like, you know, they're preparing me like, yo, like, yeah, this is, you know, it's the Raptors, let's get it. Like, I think they're in a, you know, like a spot where you might be able to get drafted, because it was always like late first, second round, right? Like, so in my head, I'm like, all right, like I'm super pumped, you know, go to Raptors, get my workout in, and I see the names I'm supposed to work out with, and it was Jakob Poeltl in the list, it was Scott Labissiere. And in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, like this is the guys, you know, like I'm excited, I'm super pumped, I'm just, you know, preparing myself. I get there, like I got my headphones on, like I'm focused. I get to the locker, and it's like, okay, like I see two little lockers on the side, and it was like Jakob locker, it was like Skal locker, and I'm like, okay, like what's going on? I was like, all right, maybe it's just, you know, whatever. I'm here getting ready, and I go on the court. And they was like, and I'm like, okay, like I don't see Jakob, I don't see Scott, and I'm like, what's going on? And they're like, but yeah, like they're gonna have like one-on-one workouts over there. So you're gonna work. I don't even remember who was in the workout. Like wherever whoever was with us, with me on my workout, I don't even know.
The B squad. It was
It was the, not even the B, probably the Z squad. I don't know what squad I was, but yeah, like so in my head, I'm like, I'm pissed. Like, so I think, I don't know if I texted my agent or something, like, oh, I'm pissed. I'm like, yo, what's going on? Like, so at that point, I'm just seeing red. Like, I'm like, yo, like, this is disrespectful. I don't care, you know? Like, so in my workout, I'm going, it was just crazy. Like, I was going crazy, blocking shots, running, scoring, defending, doing everything. And it was just like, yo, after the workout, I called my agent. I'm like, yo, like, I'm mad. Like, I'm sick, but I'm like, yo, I just killed this workout. So I felt good. Like, after the workout, I'm like, yo, I killed this. And I mean, I think Yeah, they felt that way too. So it was
good. Had you done a bunch of workouts before then?
Yeah, I think I had like 20 workouts probably like my whole pre-draft.
Yeah.
I work out for almost every team.
Yeah.
It's the guys who generally, I feel bad for the guys who are in that range.
Just had to deal with says, angry.
You're targeted in like the 25 to 35 range.
So many it's people. Like,
all right, well, I got to work out for everybody 15 through 30. Mm-hmm. And then all the teams that drafted first in the lottery get the early picks in the second round.
So I got to work out. Yeah, so I worked out for literally almost every team, to be honest. I think a day before the draft, I had a workout or something. Like I think Orlando was my last workout. So I worked out there. And then I just stayed there to watch the draft because it was like literally like a day before the draft.
Did you get a sense right after the workout with the Raptors that they were going to, that there was a good chance they were going to pick you? Or was it coming as a surprise on draft day?
Yeah, it came as, well, because again, like I knew what I did, right? Like I'm thinking like, yo, this is, yeah, like, you know, like I felt good after the workout, but still like I wasn't sure. Like I didn't really know if they was going to pick me just because. Again, like it was like my range was so like it was like, yo, you could either be 20 or you could not even get drafted. So it's like I didn't know. I didn't expect it. My agent is confident, but it's like, I mean, that's every agent, right? Like I think every agent on draft night probably tell the client that they're gonna get drafted, but it's like, yo, are you really gonna get drafted? You know, so yeah, I didn't know.
How much did you know about the guys in the team before you got picked?
Well, because in New Mexico, I had maybe like four teammates that was from Canada. So they always bragged about Canada. Oh my God, Canada is this awesome place. Toronto is this awesome place. This is happening. So they always watch the Raptors. So I think I had an early connection to Toronto and Canada in general because of those guys. And I love the way they talk, like, you know, the slang and all that. So like I always would hang out with them and I think I knew a little bit about it.
I didn't realize this until we were doing research on you, but we were talking about it at breakfast this morning. Your rookie year, you started in 38 games.
Yeah.
And you also spent 3 months at the end of the season in the G League. Which is crazy.
Oh my God.
Like,
man.
You started opening night.
Yeah, I hate talking about this because.
No, but well, I don't hate talking about it. You got the G League Finals MVP. You obviously did well, but.
Yeah, but I don't say I hate talking about it in terms of, I'm just saying, like, yo, like, I really started. Like, my first game was a start. Like, you know what I mean? Like, so in my head, I'm thinking, like, man, like, this is awesome, man. Like, my first NBA game that I've ever been in, like, period. Like, I never watched any NBA game before that. My first, it's a start. You know, we play in Detroit. I'm excited, man. Like, this is the dream. And we started, like, I think we were winning. So it's like, yo, we had an awesome record in the beginning of the year. So I'm thinking, like, yo, I'm making this. And then it's like, wah, wah, wah. And I think just getting sent to the G League was, like, crazy, man. Like, just because... Obviously, like, I come from humble beginnings, but being in the NBA and starting, and, like, it was just the bright lights and, like, from the beginning, and then you have to get sent to the G League, and I mean, you go to cities where, like, the best restaurant is IHOP. I love IHOP, but I'm just saying, like, there's no, like, you know, like, we had to figure out your food.
Staying at the Four Seasons.
Yeah, you're not staying at the Four Seasons. Like, man.
This is actually... He got an insane taste.
It's
you
crazy.
Got an insane taste, and then
like
backtrack,
backtrack like 20 steps back. Yeah, like it
baseball,
was bad.
I feel like baseball is really the only other sport where that happens.
That's crazy.
Where you have that, and then you have to go back and forth.
Mm,
and
yeah, like it was because I had to, like, I'm starting, we're winning games, like I'm super excited, like just the Raptors fans going crazy. And then you get sent to Julie for like, oh, I think I went there for like a whole month at one point, like a whole road trip they had for like 2 weeks. And it was like, oh my God, like this is what's happening. Like, you know what I mean? In my head, I'm like, yo, what's happening?
Did you have your rookie year, did you have a welcome to the NBA moment?
Welcome. Well, my first preseason game, I had to guard Kevin Durant. It was like my first preseason game. And I'm like, oh man, like what's going on? Like, yeah, because I used to watch this guy on TV, you know, like this is not like it's not normal. And my first time, I just had to guard him, and yeah, it was tough. And one of the moments I don't really say it, and well, I haven't had the opportunity to say it, but my pre-draft, even before the NBA, so I went to LA because I work out with Rico, and we were there, and I got there, and he was like, yeah, we got pros, and yeah, like, and it was like the first person like I saw was like Chris Copeland. I don't know if he played, yeah, Indiana, all that. So I don't even think he was in the league at that point. Like, I don't even think he was still in the league. So I get there and I'm like, yeah, like, I'm trying to work out. And we play. And I'm like, because I'm looking like, yeah, I'm like, I don't see, I mean, because that's my guy. Like, Chris is my dog. But I'm just like, yo, like, all right, I'm good out here. You know, like, there's no super talented NBA player here. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be good. Man, Chris. Boy, this guy was just threes, like, and his body type is a little, like, you know, I'm skinny. I'm like, so he getting me on the post, turn around, jumper, shooting threes. He's driving, pushing me, like, literally, like, it was like, yo, like, this is crazy. And this guy's not even like in the NBA right now, and like, he was like giving me like problem, bro. Like, I don't think. That was like my first time. I was like, yo, like, this guy's is different. Like, and it was like before the NBA. And I always love, like, we always talk about it because I always tell Chris, like, yo, like, from that first day, it was like, I'm like, yo, anybody in the NBA can get you buckets, right? Like, that was my moment right there. Like, and he was so smooth and like he could do everything. And I was just like, I always remember that. And every time that we play after that, I make sure I bust his ass, like, kind of like, just to like, to make sure, like, yo, Chris, you killed me that, but like, yeah, but never we always again. Laugh about that. Yeah. We always laugh about that.
It goes back, we keep bringing up this quote, but it's a great quote. The Brian Scalabrine quote that he said to a random fan who said he could beat him one-on-one.
Yep.
He said, listen, buddy, I'm closer to LeBron than you are to me. I think it's important to note just how good NBA players
yes.
are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Any opportunity I get to say this, there's so many good basketball players yep. out there, guys that are in Europe, fringe guys, mm-hmm. guys that are in the G League.
Yep.
So many great basketball players. It really is an honor to be one of the guys in the league.
Yes, sir.
By the way, Chris, this is such, the universe is so weird.
Mm.
Chris Copeland and I were texting the other day.
Oh, yeah?
This is bizarre.
Oh, man, that's funny. Chris is my guy.
He reached out to me. Yeah, I mean, it's
yeah, that's my guy,
weird how
man.
That happens.
Yeah.
Shout out
Chris.
Yeah,
shout out my dog.
Your arc, though, in your rookie contract is insane.
Hmm.
Like, you talk about someone who played basically half of his rookie season in the G League, was a 18, 20 minute a minute a night guy coming mm-hmm. off the bench his second year,
mm-hmm.
third year most improved player on a championship level team, fourth year second team All NBA, All Star starter.
Mm.
That ascension is crazy.
Right.
When did you feel like you started to figure it out?
I think, well, my second year, obviously, like, we had the bench mob. Like, I think, like, that was, like,
that was a fun team.
Yeah, that was, I mean, like, I think this is the most fun, like, to this day. I mean, the championship team was nice. Like, obviously, we won a championship. But, like, the most fun I had playing basketball was that year, like, with the bench mob. Like, literally, like, me, Fred, CJ Miles, Jakob Poeltl, DeLon. I mean, like, I think sometime Norm came off the bench. Like, literally, we had, like, a squad, and, like, we just love playing with each other, right? Like, we love, like, just sharing the ball, like, just, like, running. Like, I mean, obviously, at that time, I'm just, like, I'm going like this, like, miles per hour, and Jakob is blocking shots, and CJ just shooting, you know, lights out, and we just had so much fun, and it was never, like, yo, like, I'm trying to score or whatever. Like, it was just all of us, like, you're going to get yours, right? Like, doing whatever we do as a team. And yeah, that year, I think it was like, man, like, I'm really liking what's happening. And I remember because Coach Casey was the coach before, and it was like, because I always worked with Rico. Like, we always work on ball handling. Like, we always thought, like, because in our head, it was always like, yo, like, you can do all these things. Like, I don't know why, you know what I mean? You can't do it. So we always worked on it. I couldn't do it in the game, but we always worked on it. And I think one funny story I like to say was like, so Coach Casey was like, so I was dribbling the ball down the court one time. So I was doing a DHO and literally everyone was getting denied and like, so I'm like out there like going on each side trying to like get the ball to someone because I'm like, I'm not even looking at the rim at that time. I'm like, yo, I'm just trying to get the ball to somebody. And And he was like, yelling at me and screaming. And he was like, oh, like, just hold the ball, like, and make them look like, kind of like make them, somebody come get it. Like, in terms of like, yo, like, this is what you're supposed to do, right? Like, you can't do nothing else. And that always stuck with me because it was like, yo, like, and from that day, I was always telling Rico, like, yo, we're going to keep working on this. We just want to wait on our opportunity. And I think when Nick came in, it was like, I think he was more open into like different things. And it was like, man, like, you can handle the ball. Like, and I think DeMar and Kyle, they also saw it because they saw me work every day. Like, I'm in the gym every day. I'm working on my ball handling. I'm doing this. And they started telling Coach Casey, even like by the end of that year, it was like, yo, like, Pascal can bring the ball up. You know, if he gets the rebound, he can dribble down the court and, you know, we can play, like, he can, you know, do whatever. So I think then it was like a little bit, little by little, I know I'm getting more freedom, right? And now it's like, I'm trying to get every rebound that I can get because when I get a rebound, I can bring it up. So, and then from there, it was like just slowly, gradually just getting better and better. And with Nick, at some point, it was like equal opportunity type of basketball that we played. And we played like that with the bench mob. And it was like, you know, whenever you get the ball, you can do something, do it. And I think it started growing from there. And after my second year, obviously, like third year, it was just like a different type of confidence, you know, just coming in. And that summer was really important. Again, like I always mention Rico because like that's like my family. And it's like we always put the work in and we get to a certain level. And I felt really good about myself at that time just coming in. And I knew there was more opportunities, right? Like and now I had the freedom to do a little bit more. And I think that's always I try to say to like some of the players is like, yo, like just because you can't do it in the game don't mean you can't work on it. Like keep working on it because – like at some point your opportunity is going to come, like somebody's going to give you that freedom and you got to be ready. And I think I was because we worked on it. Like even when I, you know, all I can do is just run and dunk.
OM3 fans, I need to tell you about the most comfortable pants out there. They're from Vuori and they're magnificent. I'm not kidding. Jason told me about them. He called them butter on your legs. Vuori provides a new perspective on performance apparel, perfect if you are sick and tired of traditional old workout gear. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. So comfortable, you will want to wear it all the time, and I do. Honestly, it's comfier than whatever you're wearing right now. Now, the pants I mentioned up top is called the Men's Sunday Performance Jogger. Grab yourself a pair. It'll change your life. Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. Get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/JJ. That's Vuori.com/JJ. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/JJ and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
Do you have any perspective, just like taking a step back, looking at yourself, though, taking a step back for a second and being like, you go from your background and then being a guy who didn't even shoot threes, like you mm-hmm. mentioned, even in college, really, to being like a second team All-NBA player? Because generally, like, we've had a lot of people on the pod who have had crazy backstories and everything like that, mm-hmm. and making it to the league is a huge accomplishment. Right. But we haven't had anyone on the pod who's been second team All-NBA
right.
who's come through that backstory, you know
right,
what I mean?
Right,
to reach
right.
that
yeah.
level of that level of success.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. Again, I would love to say like, yo, I was expecting it because I put the work in, right? Like, but sometimes just things that happen and I'm obviously I'm blessed and I give credit to, you know, everyone that's my team and you know, all the people that I work with. We put like hours and hours. But then also sometimes it's like, you know, just things happen, things go your way. Like I can sit there and be like, yo, I put everything, yeah. you know, but sometimes it just happens. And I think the more I play, the more work I put in, the more, like the more confident I got in my game. And once I just think that I had that confidence and just seeing even people around you seeing like, you know, like you getting better and. It's definitely like opened my eyes to like kind of like be a believer myself.
Was there a part of DeMar and Kyle when you were coming in that helped you with that?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like I always think like those guys was like just it was a perfect thing because you know DeMar was quiet. It was chill. DeMar was always chill. And then Kyle was always like the more vocal person. And those two together just like, you know, they showed us everything. Like in terms of like, you know, like Kyle's in here every single day. He's the first in the gym. Getting his work done in the morning, like doing everything. And then, you know, DeMar doing the same, like every single day, like they in here consistently, they're professional. Like you don't really hear about them like doing nothing crazy really. And they stayed on us like from the beginning. And also we had a great group together, like coming in, like it was me, Fred, Jakob, Norm, probably was like his second year or something, like DeLon. Like, so we had like a young group of guys, and then we had vets that was like, you know, show us how to be, but we also had fun. Like we also, you know, cause we had people that we could have fun with, and it was like a crazy dynamic to have. And I think that's what made it so great. And yeah, if one thing I just learned from those guys, just being a professional, and obviously the little things they taught us about, like, you know, like how to move and some of the things that, you know, you just can't do in the NBA or like, you know, and yeah, it was just great to have those guys. I mean, super blessed that they were here when we were here.
Did you have an inkling that the Kawhi trade was going to happen before it happened, or did it come as a surprise?
Definitely a surprise, because yeah, I know DeMar told that story like 1,000 times already. We was in Vegas and all that, so like I didn't think nothing was really gonna happen. And it was like, I think I remember I went to dinner with my agent. I was in Vegas and we was talking, and like literally like it just came like a couple of hours after that, it was like the trade, and I'm sitting there like, oh my god, like what's going on, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I didn't expect it at all.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the finals that year. Just going up against that Golden State team, obviously they had won 2 straight championships. You know, Kevin's banged up. Couldn't have predicted Clay would go down in game 6, but your team's mindset going into that series, going up against an historically great team who had won 2 straight championships, where was sort of the level of confidence and just the level of euphoria that you had? Because I always tell people, like, the deeper you go in the playoffs, the more awesome it gets.
Yep.
There's just so many eyes. There's so much buzz.
Yeah, it's like
there's
every
so much,
day.
Every round you advance, you just feel more confident. Mm-hmm. Like it's sort of like getting to the Super Bowl,
right,
you know?
Right.
And so just where was your team at going to that series, facing those guys?
Yeah, and I think like you're saying, like even the finals, like, yo, like the media is crazy. Like every single game, every single practice. Like, so it's just... like it's so like the, I feel like everything just feels brighter, right? Like it was crazy. And I think for us coming in, we played like Golden State well, like all year. We felt like, you know, like, so again, I liked, you know, playing against them because it was mostly like guys that can, you know, there was no real big guy really, right? Like they all guards. I mean, I'm like, I like to guard guards, and we can switch, like we can do all those things. And obviously, I mean, when they had KD and like, you know, like and Clay and all that, it's like harder. And I think for us, it was like, oh, okay, like some of those guys going down. It was like, now I was like, yo, we just got a triple team Curry. Like, and then like, yo, like at the end of the day, like not saying the other guys are not good, but like, yo, I just don't want Curry to get 50. Like, that's it. You know what I mean? And the rest, like we can fight. Like we're going to scrap, like pass the ball to somebody. We running out there. We, you know, like challenging. But I think for us, like we thought we had a chance because like we always played them well. Like, you know, obviously it was Golden State, but in our heads it was like the way we matched up, we felt like it was a good matchup for us. Like, you know, like I think playing Philly was like super tough because, like, you know, like it was like you got it, Joe. They have like really tall and like physical team. Not saying that Golden State wasn't physical, but like they had more, like, you know, like it's more like, you know, guards and it's like kind of guard play, and for us it matched what we did because everyone could switch, you know, like we had the personnel to do it. And I mean, it was going to be a lot harder with Kevin Durant and you know what I mean, like in there, but I like that matchup, to be honest.
What did you make of Fred's run starting in that Milwaukee series?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, we always thank God for the baby, man. We all even when I see little Freddy right now in a tunnel somewhere, I was just trying to give him a dab, like, yo, came in, man. Fred was, because again, like the Philly series was like,
he didn't play good.
It was crazy. It was crazy for him, right? Like, because I think, like I said again, size, you guys had so much size, and it was super tough. And I think when, you know, obviously he got to the Milwaukee series, he was just going crazy. Like, I don't know, that boy, yeah, he was on another level, like just making threes. Obviously, like the job that he, like on defense, obviously his defense is always there. But I think on offense, his confidence obviously like just grew from that Milwaukee series. And he just gave us like a, because I think it's always easy to just be like, oh, Kawhi is the reason why we won, right? Like that's the easiest thing to do. But I think one thing you can say is like, I mean, Kawhi went to the Clippers. Like it wasn't that easy. It's not that easy to win. Like you need people, like, you know. And I think for us, who was willing to understand like his role, like we understood everything, and we just matched well. Like, and we had other guys that can do so much, you know. Like when you think about Kyle, Fred, and you know, Serge was playing.
Serge had some great moments.
Yeah. And I think everyone had their moments. Like, and when you look at it, it was like everyone had their moments when they went. Obviously, Kawhi took us to a lot of places, but there was the Milwaukee game where Fred went crazy. There was me game one in the finals going crazy. There was me first game Philly. Yeah. There was, so I think like there was like so many other moments. It was Kyle that first, like that game six going crazy.
Game six, Kyle.
Yeah. So I think like it's cool to say all that, but I felt like we was just a team. Like, and we had, you know, like we had people that at certain places, at certain times that just came and played an incredible level. And again, Fred was one of those guys.
So I want to follow up on something you brought up earlier, and this is in no way to disparage Dwayne Casey, who I think is one of the great mm-hmm. coaches in the NBA, but specifically about Nick.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think Nick ended up being the right guy to bring this team a championship, to a team that had a high seed a number of times, made deep finals, but not gone over the hump?
Right. Yeah, I think one of the things, like I just said, it was like he was thinking different. Like he didn't.
Like a boxing one-on-one.
Yeah, he would do crazy stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and I think like he's not afraid. He wasn't afraid to try different things. You know, not saying that other coaches are, but like I think he was just more open to trying new things and using guys in a different way. And like, you know, like just it was kind of like an equal opportunity type of offense where, you know, like it's not just me sitting in the corner hoping that I'll get the ball ever, you know? It's like us moving the ball and like, you know, everyone can touch it. Like, and you have guys that can do multiple things. And I don't know, it was just like the perfect timing for him. And he came in and definitely instilled confidence in a lot of us. And gave us the opportunity to do way more. And again, like it was outside the box. Like he was thinking and trying things that hadn't been really done.
So you just mentioned this, and I feel like a lot of people right now are probably wondering this. If you're not going to triple him, how are you supposed to defend Steph?
Yeah, man, I don't know. Yeah, I can't tell you that, bro. Like this guy is like, I mean, most of the time it feels like he's just like throwing that thing up. Like it goes in every time. Like he's just so incredible, you know? Like, and I think one of the things that we always done is like, yo, like we're going to try to take the best player out. Like that's, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but especially with a guy as you know, incredible as Curry, that's what you have to do. You have to. Like, I can't just watch him just come off screens and shoot from like half court knowing that he's going in and still let him do it. You know what I mean? Like, and I know sometimes it's like, oh yeah, you think he's far, but like, bro, this guy is like a layup. So it's like, you have to take away what he does best. And yeah, I think you have to. To answer your question, you have to, bro. Like
you have to basically try to make someone else
go for
30.
Yeah, for me, it's like I'd rather watch, I don't know, like the third best player or the fourth best player on that team score than like seeing the best player just get whatever they want.
I don't remember Draymond and him doing this last year. But the thing I've seen a bunch this year is when you blitz him with the big,
mm-hmm.
he'll just get off the ball super early to Draymond, and then Draymond will come right back for a DHO. Because if you've guarded mm-hmm. guys
yep.
and you've been in a trap, but if you're the guy guarding the ball in a mm-hmm. trap, as soon as he gives up that ball, mm-hmm. your natural instinct is to turn
yep.
because now it's a 4-on-3.
Mm-hmm.
And what they figured out is he's coming right back off the DHO. And they did a similar thing last year, but it wasn't on that. But it was just the way that Draymond was flipping screens.
Yeah.
Like the two of them, to me, the tandem there, the level of basketball intelligence, obviously Curry's skill set. Mm-hmm. But Draymond as a screener, Draymond as a passer. Draymond willing to manipulate defenses. Mm-hmm. They're just so smart. That's what makes them so hard to guard.
I think so. And one thing is like that's underrated is like Steph, like, level of conditioning is crazy. Because I think for me, just watching him, like, he gives up the ball and he always moving. Like, just running and he can still run that fast and trying to get open. And once he catches it, like, he can still make it like it was a layup. You know, like, I think for me, that's like, because, again, if it was just somebody that when he gives the ball up and you can kind of, like, be there and he's going to, like, just stay there a little bit and kind of, like, give up, he keeps moving the whole possession from here to here and still have the level like you know, focus to like make the shot every time. And obviously like those guys finding them, it's incredible. But yeah, like Steph just, you know, yeah, his I don't know. I think his conditioning, I think is underrated because the way he runs everywhere to get open every night is crazy.
We like asking this to a lot of guys. If you can't name any of your teammates, are there younger guys around the league you either just like watching, like playing against, who you feel like are sort of on the way up?
Like younger, like...
Yeah, like you a couple years ago. You know, you before everybody sort of figured it out.
Right. Who right now do I like watching? That was a good question. Caught me off guard right there.
He wants to say Scotty
Barnes. Yeah, I mean, like, you say off the same
number.
No,
but it's like so like, obvious. That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
I'm like,
so,
I want to say Scotty.
Like, we know that. But by the way, like I think even people who watch the show or listen to the show, like they know that now too. And not that they have to be like totally under the radar, but just like, you know, people that like you wouldn't normally expect. Like maybe in the first couple months, who you played against, and you're just like, oh yeah, like they got something.
That's tough, bro. Like I don't know. I don't know. My natural answer was Scotty because I'm like, yo, like.
I mean, he's well. What about? So we should talk about Scotty.
I think like things that he can do on the floor, like is crazy. His length and I think he has really good basketball IQ. He can pass. And I think his offensive game is just going to keep growing. But what he can do on defense and you know, guard 1-5, yeah, like I think the sky's
you can see that from day one with him.
Yeah, for sure. Like you can definitely see. And I think, again, it's the opportunity, right? Like there's a lot of people coming in that don't get the opportunity to play right away as a rookie. Like, and the experience that you get is just something that's just going to carry you like over the years. And I think he's just only going to get better.
I got one more question, Tommy, and I haven't really asked anybody this that was on the team last year, but going to Tampa last year, to relocate, and obviously Florida was a little different than some other states that NBA teams are located in, but we still had to abide, especially after January 10th, we still had to abide by those protocols. But just how weird, how difficult, how much did moving the team down to Tampa sort of affect last season?
Yeah, I think it was tough, man. Like, and one thing is like, you also started to think for us, it's like, right, like, I mean, it's hard to move around, but it's like, we have the ability to do it, right? Like, now we have staff and all these people that don't really, you know, like they're not well off as us and they can't really do all this and they can't really move their families there and be with their families and those guys, it was tough on them. And I just seen them going through that and us just trying to navigate through it. Now you have to get a new routine and knowing, you know, like this was home, it's comfort. Like, and as players, we know we love that, you know, like sometimes you want to go back and sleep on your bed and you know what's happening. And for people that have families, like, now you have to move your whole family somewhere. Like, I mean, your kids, if you have kids, you have to go to school somewhere. It was just so much. Like, you know, and then we go to an arena where it's like, I mean, some nights we got booed. So I'm like, I don't even know who's our fans or not. Like, I think it was just like random basketball fans. Like, you know, people just go out there. You're going to see people like we played Golden State. And you're going to see a Memphis jersey and you're going to see a Dallas jersey over there. And it's like, It's like, what's going on? You know what I mean? Like, it was just like so random, and you get to the court, you never know who you're gonna see. Like, like, so for me, I'm just like seeing on the court, like, you don't even know who. Like, it was crazy, man. It was weird.
I remember when you guys, the Pelicans, played opening night in Tampa last year, and I think we talked to, I was like, who's at this game? Like, who would, like, there's random people in Tampa.
I think it's just like people just like, yo, you have a date tonight. Like, all right, let's go to the game, man. Like, what team you support? Yeah, I like Golden State. Like, it's not even Golden State playing tonight. Like, it's like Boston. Like, and they're just people just going and like just hanging out, and you score, and it doesn't even feel like, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, you score, and like, yeah, people are going crazy, and it's like, these people are just cheering for anybody.
Or they're booing you. Or yeah, they're mad at you.
Or they're booing, or they're cheering for the other team, or this team. Like, so they just want to watch basketball. It's literally like an exhibition game every night. It was just weird.
But you've had the luxury of playing for the Raptors your whole career.
Right.
And Toronto home games, Raptors fan base, one of the best in the NBA, one of the best in sports, the way they support their team. There are, and I've played in some of those places, where you have a home game, and if it's the Bulls or the Warriors or the Lakers or the Heat or the Knicks, feels a little bit like a road game. And so to hear you talk about Tampa that way is not a surprise.
Yeah. Like, it was for us, it was crazy, because it was like, man, like, what's going on in here? I mean, literally, it was crazy. You had to be there, like, sometimes. It's like, we had the game sometimes, like, what is going on? We're in an arena, and like, it feels just strange. And I mean, the only good thing was like, it was warm. Like, that's the only, I think for everyone, if you ask anyone, like, they enjoy that part. Like, you could go home and you know, you're sitting outside in the backyard, it's warm. But I think that was the only good thing about that. Like, the rest was just like, you know, us just, you know, missing our fans and missing home and wanting to have that feeling again. And yeah, it wasn't natural being out there.
Coldest weekend I ever spent in my life was 2016 All-Star break All-Star in Toronto. Great.
I heard that.
That was the last 3-point contest, right? You did, right?
Yeah. That was the coldest weekend of my life.
Yeah, I heard that.
The entire weekend was like -5 without the wind chill.
That's crazy.
And you know, the wind off those lakes, it was just...
I heard that. People always tell me stories about that. Like, it was crazy. It was the worst weekend ever.
All right. Well, we appreciate the time, man. Thank you for sharing your story, and best of luck, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. Again, like I said, I feel big time now, man. I made it, mama.
If you like The Old Man of the Three, you can listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey. Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that saved Abercrombie? Or which real tech acquisition is like Game of Thrones? Or the one financial equation that can finally solve climate change? Then check out the Daily News podcast, The Best One Yet. Every morning on The Best One Yet, hosts Nick and Jack serve up three of the most interesting business news stories and why you need to know them in just 20 minutes. So whether you want to kick off a conversation with your buddies, you're going for that promotion at work, or you just want to know the trends before your friends, be in the know this year by starting your morning with The Best One Yet every weekday. Follow The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
Yo, Trey.
Kevin, what's up, man?
You know, I've been thinking, what would have happened if the NBA never vetoes the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers and we get CP3 in the same backcourt as Kobe in LA?
Well, you get a very happy Jack Nicholson, for sure.
And the Lakers probably win a bunch more championships. CP3 finally gets a ring or two or three. And the Kardashian empire is forever altered.
What did you just say? Hey, everybody, I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. And we're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter
anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass
or play call. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.